Hello, everybody. Thanks very much for taking part in today's call. I'm very excited. We've got a social marketing expert from Public Health England with us today, Daniel Ward. Dan spent 14 years working for councils in London and the South East, including 10 years in local government communications and 4 years working for the leader of a London borough. And he's now Public Health England's marketing manager for London. He's managing Public Health England's relationships with key non-commercial partners in the capital, including all 33 London boroughs, the NHS, the GLA, and London councils. And during this interview, we're going to be talking about important themes in physical activity promotion, using digital in your marketing and behaviour change work, and why it's important, two examples of successful digital campaigns and what you can learn from them, common mistakes that people make in using digital, and resources you can access to help you get people active locally. So Dan, thanks first of all for coming on the call. Can you hear me okay still?
I can, yes. Hello, everyone.
Excellent. So let's start back at the beginning, Dan. What's your, can you explain your role at Public Health England? I know I've kind of given a quick overview there, but can you give a little bit more detail?
I mean, yeah, the overview is exactly right, John. You've taken the words out of my mouth. But yeah, so I'm looking after, on the client side, looking after our relationships in the public sector. So my counterparts operate in the commercial world, looking after relationships with people like Amazon, Boots, and big national companies like that. I'm in the public sector, which is where I spent my career, and looking after relationships in local government, NHS, and national government as well. And what we're looking to do is get those organisations to activate our campaigns on our behalf. Now, I know that sounds like a lose-lose for them and a win-win for us, but actually my job is to identify the business needs and objectives of those organisations and look at how our campaigns can help them deliver those objectives. And I think that's where it's a really powerful offer. Now, that's a bit of a niche part of marketing called partnership marketing, and that's the sector that I work in.
Excellent. All right, that sounds pretty thorough. So what do you think are the important themes in physical activity promotion at the moment?
The big thing that's really, really coming to the fore over the last couple of years, well, I say coming to the fore, so when I stood up in front of the London Physical Activity Network, which is probably where a lot of our listeners today will be familiar with that, this is about 50 people across the physical activity public sector in London. I stood up in front of them about 2 years ago and I said, look, we're going to get into a physical activity campaign, but we're looking for a universal offer. We're looking for the universal solution. I said, we don't know what it is. And if anyone knows, I'd like to know. And the room effectively shouted at me, it's walking. And we were like, well, okay, perhaps it's walking. We went away and looked. So in typical public health way, we then spent 2 years doing a longitudinal study to come to that conclusion. I think, I know that sounds slightly counterproductive, but that's one of the things that I quite like about Public Health England, is that it will take the time to do that kind of work properly and thoroughly. So I think it was obvious to anyone who'd worked in the sector that walking was the universal physical activity offer. However, it was important that we proved that from a pure epidemiology point of view. So we wanted to look at all the evidence that had been gathered so far about the benefits of walking and tie those into a proper assessment of how that would improve people's lives. And that's what we did. It took us about 2 years to do that. But last year we reached that point, and now we're pretty confident that we can describe walking as the universal physical activity. Now, when I say universal, I think this is the key here. And this is always interesting on the webinar, isn't it? Because you can kind of do things that I wouldn't normally do in a presentation, which is read off lots of statistics I've handily got on my laptop here. But I'm going to read you all a direct quote from our physical activity evidence review that was published last year and has been adopted by the chief medical officer. So this is how we explain it. So brisk walking, by which we mean at least 3 miles per hour, is the optimal choice for a physical activity campaign for increasing physical activity across an inactive population, as it is already prevalent, has no skill, facility or equipment requirement and is more accessible and acceptable than other forms of physical activity. So that's quite a long sentence in a complicated way, but actually it does sum up what we're why we think that walking is the way forward here. So if we look at those, if we break those bits down, we've got prevalence, so we know that most people walk, accepting some sectors of you know with physical disablements, we accept that walking is prevalent in the population. It doesn't need any skill. So if you physically can walk, you don't need to be taught how to walk. You can do it immediately. And you don't need any special equipment or facilities. I mean, one of the things we found when we were doing consumer research into this topic as well is that there's a real reluctance within active populations to do physical activity that involves getting dressed up in a costume. So they didn't want to get in a costume, didn't want to be seen doing physical activity, didn't want to particularly, you know, go somewhere to do it and put it in this box of kind of physical activity. So that's really important that, you know, it doesn't need any facility or equipment. And these two last things about accessibility and acceptance. So again, looking at the research, we know that walking is accessible to large swathes of the population. It's very easy to include walking into your day-to-day lives without any particular variance to your patterns of behavior. And it's also acceptable. So when we spoke to this audience, the inactive population, we know that although they didn't want to go to the gym or do anything that was, you know, perceived as sport or exercise particularly, they did think that walking was okay. They thought that was acceptable. Interestingly, they didn't see it as physical activity. So that's been one of our jobs, is to reposition walking, you know, as an acceptable form of exercise, but actually something that's going to give you benefit as well.
Wow. Sounds like you guys are pretty thorough about it. Totally to our experience as well. It's like we've been running a whole load of different campaigns, and we found the ones that work the best are the walking campaigns. It's the ones that get the most people into activity and it gets getting the best results, and you kind of keep finding that time and time again. It's really interesting. Like, lots of campaigns you can work well and can get lots of people into activity, but in terms of sheer numbers and reaching the most inactive people and reaching hard to reach groups, the walking ones are the ones that work and by far the best. So it definitely fits with what your findings were and what everybody in that room shouted at you.
It's been very useful. I suppose, yeah, it's been very useful. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because so we do that piece of work. We know it will improve people's quality of life. And I'll come on to what the benefits are in a second. But what was interesting when we did the research again around 2 years ago is that this was the real kind of PR hook for the news media, is that 60%, just over actually, so getting over two thirds of middle-aged adults, so between 40 and 60 year olds, hadn't walked continuously for 10 minutes in the last 28 days. I'll say that again. They hadn't walked continuously for 10 minutes in the last month, which was astonishing. Absolutely astonishing.
How much 60% do you say?
Yeah, 60%. That's 40 to 60-year-olds. Now, taking all adults, so this is 18 to 75-year-olds, 30% haven't walked for 10 minutes in the last week. So that kind of, when we talk about the problem, when we talk about the scale of the problem, that's the scale of the problem.
Yeah, that's huge, isn't it? Wow, that's really interesting.
It is, and I think this is this is one of the things that really, you know, why Public Health England puts together such a compelling offer. So, yes, we've got we've got a decent marketing operation. We've got the government's biggest marketing operation in terms of funding and scale. But because you put it together with all this kind of insight and epidemiology into the risks and the behaviours and the science, that makes a really compelling argument. What we know, for example, about physical inactivity is that it dramatically increases your risk of illness, disease, and ultimately death. It's horrible to say, isn't it? But it does increase your risk of premature and avoidable death. And we know that the less you're physically active, the more dramatically that risk increases. So if you do the active recommendations are 150 minutes, moderate to vigorous per week. If you do less than 30 minutes, your risk is exponential of serious disease and disability, cancer, diabetes, heart attack, stroke, and ultimately preventable death. So there's a real compelling argument there about getting people into physical activity. When you put that together with our insight and understanding about walking, we know that that's the area where you can make the most gain.
Mm.
Now, Will, it's probably worth touching on benefits, isn't it? I think one of the other trends, we talk about trends across physical activity, we're seeing, from our point of view, and I know this might not be a view shared more widely in the sector, but from our point of view, we think that we're seeing a tail off in weight loss as an engagement tool on physical activity. So I think a lot of people spoke to the audience, think about physical activity as a means towards weight loss or at least managing a healthy weight. And it certainly has a role in managing a healthy weight. There is no question about that. However, it's the use of weight loss as an engagement tool, so getting inactive people active, probably is less important than we originally thought. Looking at some research we're doing, I know this is around child obesity, but actually it probably applies to adults as well. The split between diet and exercise for obese patients, obesity, is about 70-30. It's about 70% diet contributory factor to obesity, 70% and 30% lack of exercise. So that's quite interesting that, you know, as a way of losing weight, although it has a role, actually probably diet is probably going to be more important. But what we probably want to focus on more now around physical activity, and I think this is going to be more beneficial. It's interesting because the audience probably won't. What we found from this audience is they're expecting really quick results from physical activity. So if they did like a few sessions in the gym, they're expecting to lose weight really dramatically, and it's just not going to happen. So, you know, that is going to be a year's kind of program of weight loss, so for a sustained weight loss over a longer period. So they weren't getting those quick returns that they're expecting. What we do know is that you do get quick returns on other things around physical activity. So you get improved mood, you get increased physical fitness, which I know sounds a bit daft to say that it makes you more physically fit, but it does. So you get, you know, you're not breathless as easily, for example, and it's easier to do day-to-day activities. So things like housework or shopping or like just commuting become easier if you become more physically active. And those things happen a lot more quickly than weight loss. So that's probably the other trend, I think, that we're going to start focusing. We will focus a lot more on the other benefits of physical activity aside from weight loss.
And are you finding those other benefits you've mentioned, are they ones that the consumers are saying appeal to them?
Yes. Yeah, so the audience were, this is one of the jobs, isn't it, that we've got to do as a sector, is reposition physical activity, reposition the benefits of physical activity. So, you know, we've got to make a compelling argument about why you should do physical activity. And probably using weight loss isn't one of those. People respond really well to this idea of improving your kind of mood, you know, like managing your, your kind of stress levels and mood. It does improve those, and it does improve them really quickly. So that's a really nice way of appealing to people about it. There are other benefits as well, like, get quite a lot of crossover benefits into the other sectors of adult health, so around smoking, for example, or alcohol, or sleep. So, you know, we start to see better physical activity contributing to better sleep. And in turn, we talk to smokers about, you know, actually, if you cut down and stop smoking, you'll find your physical activity improves. You do more physical activity. You feel like you can't really want to smoke so much because it's impairing your ability to do that. So it kind of creates an holistic package of benefits. Quite nicely fits with that, and weight loss doesn't seem to fit in that package, whereas the other ones do.
Interesting. Yeah, we found like various different benefits around physical activity that were kind of for different audiences have worked well in different campaigns. We've done a piece of research with Department of Health a few years ago now, where we looked at like the different benefits that appealed to each of the different sporting segments in society, and kind of finding out, you know, which groups should you mention anything to do with health, you know, and which ones do you mention anything to do with, you know, it's about the kids or being a good role model and this kind of thing. And yeah, weight loss didn't appear high on that list, so that's really interesting. That kind of fits with what you're saying as well, and it's not something that we've used. And interestingly, you're not allowed to use it in any Facebook ads as well, which is kind of a big thing for us using Facebook ads. They kind of banned that a while ago, didn't they, like any mention of weight loss in the ads. I think there were too many people spamming stuff. You know, like ads saying, you know, you're going to get super fit and just take this one tablet or something like this. And they were like, no, we have to get rid of these. So it's kind of soured the pot for everybody else. But it sounds like your experiences, that doesn't matter too much because it's not worth saying it anyway. So it's quite good. Let's move on a little bit to talking about actual running the campaigns. Why do you think digital is so important in terms of people's marketing to get the message out there?
So, I mean, digital's on a mass. I hear this a lot. I hear this a lot. People going about, oh, we've got to do something around digital. We must do something. And they're probably, they're right. It's about how we shape that offer. But look, digital's on a massive upward trajectory. And, you know, every sector of digital grows every year, and it grows exponentially. It's absolutely astonishing. I suppose it's worth saying that these are kind of not secret numbers. So a lot of people think that we kind of keep these, the keepers of these numbers in marketing. They're not. Digital's been really good about kind of telling its own story online. So really big kind of trusted organizations, ONS, Office for National Statistics, and Ofcom, for example, do yearly studies into digital. So they're looking at internet access at home, internet access on the move, smartphone ownership, penetration, usage, things like that. And then other big companies, Deloitte, do a really big survey every year about usage of mobile phones particularly. So these kind of things are all out there. So I'll make that clear to the audience that if you want to understand the digital usage in Britain, then you only have to search on the internet. There are lots and lots of things out there about it. And what we know is the smartphone ownership is going up dramatically and exponentially. So that's, you know, I think that's quite interesting, isn't it? So a lot of people talk to me about smartphones and whether that's the way forward. And I think it probably is. What we know is that smartphone usage, the kind of frequency with which people are accessing their smartphones, is going up dramatically. So currently about 91% of people check their smartphone at least once a day. So that's of the whole population. So you can see how significant that is as a kind of example of how much people are using these devices. I think it's worth talking a little bit about generations as well, about the kind of, so get this kind of discussion a lot, that kind of smartphones and internet and digital is only for a certain generation, is only for younger people. Do you find that a lot, John, with your kind of...
I've heard that, yeah. Yeah, and the stats that I've seen around it are just the speed at which over 55s is growing in the use of digital and Facebook is astronomical, and it's, I think, way higher than what people think it is. Have you got any numbers around that?
Yes, I do. And again, it's one of the advantages of sitting in front of my laptop is I do actually have the numbers in front of me. So this is from the, let me get the report so you guys can look it up because it'd be really interesting. It's from the... Right, it's the Deloitte report, so it's State of the Smart. It's the Consumer and Business Usage Patterns from the Global Mobile Consumer Survey 2017. I think if you just Google Deloitte Global Mobile Consumer Survey 2017, that will take you into the report, and it's well worth looking through it. It's got loads of stats in there that are going to be absolutely fascinating. So in 2012, smartphone usage among 55 to 75-year-olds was at 30%, which is, you know, quite high. But by 2017, it was up to 71%, and it's only going upwards from there. So this is 55 to 75-year-olds. So at 71%, so getting on for three quarters have a smartphone. So that kind of, I mean, that kind of just quashes the myth straight away that smartphones and digital is just for kids. It just isn't. It just isn't. It really is something that's used by everyone across the whole population. It's a really positive thing for us because we now know that digital really is reaching those kind of audiences, and that's really important for us. And I think this kind of idea about the generational difference is fascinating. So Deloitte again looked at three generations. They looked at grandparents, parents, and teenagers, and this was in 2017. And they were looking at, I mean, you can't really do a question and answer with the audience because they can't answer back. But I'll say that one of those groups checked their phone 12 times a day. So either grandparents, parents, or teenagers checked their smartphone 12 times per day. Right. Now, that was the grandparents checking 12 times a day. The teenagers were checking 90 times a day. 90 times a day they were checking their phone. Parents are on 33 times a day. So people have got everyone's got smartphones and everyone is on them all the time. And that's kind of all you need to know about digital, isn't it? It's just growing and growing. It really is. And the other thing that I think is interesting is going back to the Ofcom. So this is the Ofcom annual report into
the whole kind of digital landscapes around internet and smartphone ownership and all that. It's the Ofcom annual report. And what they do every year, and I love this one because no one else does it, is they do this most missed device report. So they do this tranche called most missed device. So they ask people, they take devices away from people and ask people to say what they miss the most. It's hilarious. So this is published in 2017. So this is a 2016 survey. And 41% of adults would miss their smartphone. Now that's only going up. But actually TV was only 32. Radio was only 3%. So you can see that, like, you take the radio off people and only 3% miss it. 41% were going to miss their smartphone if you took it away for just a day. And that number's only getting higher and higher.
Yeah, so we'd found with, we'd looked at the stats last year for Facebook, and we'd found that 53% of 55 to 64-year-olds were on Facebook and 41% of 65 to 74-year-olds. So it's just like, you know, miles away from what people were thinking the numbers were. And that obviously is only going to be higher this year as well. Was data from like last summer or something like that. So, yeah. Why do you think some of the reasons that people don't use digital? Is it just that they don't know these numbers, or are there other things that are stopping people?
I think the generational thing is what I get pushed on the most. So I get that's the biggest challenge for me. What do people say? Yeah, there's more kind of subtlety to that as well. So people talk about definitely about generations. So there's this perception that old people don't use digital. And then there's stuff about smartphone penetration. So there's another one about another myth that people don't have smartphones. So it's kind of like a middle class thing. And working class, we use the term working class. Well, C2DE is what we use. So that kind of, you know, if we talk about socioeconomic groups, we're talking about the second half of the socioeconomic spectrum. If everyone's okay with that, so we've got A, B, C1 as the top half, and then C2, D, and E as the bottom half. We're talking about the bottom half. This myth that they don't have smartphones, it's not true. Everyone's got smartphones. There is another one about internet access as well. So people talk to me a lot about not having internet access on the go. You know, it's quite hard to get data. So if you don't have a lot of cash, then having data on your smartphone can be quite a challenge. All of those are myths, and they're proven just by annual surveys and reports. Like I said, by trusted organisations. So all this stuff is kind of out there, and I think that these are kind of barriers that people put up. And I'm not quite sure that we need to be having those debates still necessarily. I think we can probably move on and accept that digital really is now pervasive. It really is part of our lives, and we can kind of, you know, I think it's a bit of a distraction to have those debates. That's my personal view, but.
One of the things Maybe. I think that I've kind of been coming across when I talk to people is some people saying, not necessarily saying this out loud, but kind of when I start getting into conversations and trying to help them get started with using digital, is it seems to be partly it's difficult. You know, it's not something they're trained in. It's not something they've got experience in. Does that fit for you? Is kind of your experience?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it sounds a bit harsh for me because, I mean, I spend all my life doing this stuff, so I don't find it that hard, but I do appreciate that it's not necessarily that easy. I mean, and yeah, maybe people point to other barriers to kind of get out of it. I don't know. It's hard to say, John, isn't it? It's hard to say. But I suppose the
I still find a lot of people using posters and leaflets.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the positive is that digital is really not that hard to get to grips with. I mean, I started in PR, so my job was on news media, so writing, you know, writing press releases and content and that kind of thing. And then I switched on to into marketing and retrained in marketing and then in digital, and it's not that hard. I think if anyone's got a comms background, they can pick this stuff up reasonably easily. I think one of the most exciting things about digital is that the internet's awash with guides and help and stuff. So whatever question you have, the answer is always just Google it, because there will be just this wealth of community-based stuff. So all the digital platforms themselves, you know, Facebook are particularly good at it, publish pages and pages and pages of really easy-to-use guides. But then supporting it, there's this massive digital community as well. So whatever question you have, it will have been asked somewhere before, and it will be answered on the internet. And that's one of the nice things about digital, is that, you know, just sitting in front of your laptop, you can probably get to grips with most of it.
So what mistakes do you see people make when they start using digital then?
So I think it's quite interesting, and I saw that someone had asked us, we'll probably touch on this, because someone had asked about organic reach and this kind of thing, haven't they, on Facebook, so it's probably interesting to cover that at this point. But I think the biggest mistake that people when they're switching to digital is not really understanding what the channel is for and what audience they're trying to reach with each channel. So I think particularly look at kind of Twitter. It's going to be controversial, isn't it? I can see how this is going to be controversial. It's quite hard because you can't play to the audience because you can't see their reaction. But I'm just going to say it anyway. So Twitter probably doesn't reach the people that we're trying to reach. If we're talking about accessing this C2DE inactive population, Twitter probably isn't going to do that. Twitter's really good for kind of news media, really good for business and industry and stakeholder, what we call stakeholders, you know, like councillors, for example, if you work in local government, that kind of Twitter profile is really good. It's really good for kind of professional networks as well. I'm not so sure that it's really good for kind of blue collar inactive audiences. We don't see that as working particularly. And I know Twitter's quite easy because everyone can set up a profile on Twitter and can tweet really regularly. I would question whether that does that much. So that's a really good example of people jumping to an easy digital channel without really getting to grips with how it reaches the audience that they're trying to reach. I mean, look, digital's like, it's like any other channel, is you've got to be clear about who you're reaching with it. And I always use like print media examples. So if you're trying to reach like middle class people in Notting Hill, you don't want to be putting adverts and stories in the Sun. And you know,
yeah. Yeah.
Conversely, if you want to get like a football fan crowd in Southend, probably the Guardian isn't the right newspaper for you. Digital has the same, digital is exactly the same considerations as well. And I think people kind of lose sight of that. They just see digital as an homogenous thing, but actually you have to be as sophisticated in your channel choice as you do in print and other forms of media as well. And the other big mistake that people make is around assuming digital's free. So nothing's ever free. Mm. Nothing's free. It isn't free at all. It's not free. I just keep saying it isn't free. People think it's free, and it isn't, because just by creating the content, so by writing a tweet, costs money. That's an overhead. So it costs your time to create that content, and that's just the most basic level. The second you go beyond that and start producing, you know, imagery and film and regular posts, you know, all that content has a cost associated with it, even if it is just your time. That really is worth people getting to grips with. To build an audience takes large amounts of that time, so you're looking at a real kind of investment of time. And I would also say that probably not going to do that much without putting money behind digital as well.
Yeah, definitely agree. Yeah. I mean, you look at Facebook and there was that big change, wasn't there, in the algorithm at the beginning of this year, but it's been going on for like 6 years now or something, where gradually less and less of your followers are actually going to see your content unless you're paying for it. And you pay not all that much. Hi, everybody. I'm really sorry about that. It seems that something went wrong with the sound there. Dan, are you still on there? Dan has got cut off as well. So hopefully he'll call back in again in a second. I don't know how come that happened. I'm really sorry, everybody. Just bear with us. While we're waiting for Dan, are you back on?
Hello. Yes.
Dan,
good job.
I wasn't speaking
when I got cut off. Sorry. Do go on.
I was really sorry, everybody. That was we just both got cut off all of a sudden. So I'm going to check and see if everybody else is still on. So yeah, everybody else is still listening in. So we'll carry on from where we got to. Public Health England had a sexual health campaign that worked really well recently. Can you tell everybody a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, this is a classic example of using the right channels. So we targeted a sexual health campaign encouraging 16 to 24-year-olds to use condoms. If anyone's interested, they don't use condoms. Let's just accept that. Kids don't use condoms anymore, and that's a real problem for STIs, sexually transmitted infections, particularly. STI rates in London are very high. So we wanted to reposition kids' views of condoms and make them seem more acceptable, more normalised, and prepare and get them to buy and use condoms. So there's a classic example here of understanding the audience and understanding the kind of sources that they look to for information and the kind of channels that we use. When we look at the digital channels, what we know is that, you know, things like Snapchat, for example, are really, really prevalent with this audience. As Facebook starts to tail off the teenagers, although they're there on Facebook, actually their usage of it is starting to tail off. Snapchat is something that they're on, you know, 120 times a day, literally just constantly checking Snapchat. And that's a real nice platform. So it's pure peer-to-peer, pure photography-led, if no one's used it, purely imagery on Snapchat. And essentially you're taking pictures of your day-to-day life and sharing them with your friends. And that's got a real buzz about it. So it's the first time that we've stepped into a Snapchat audience, but really nice way of reaching it. So what's interesting about that, and the real lesson here, is that you've got to adapt your creative accordingly. So Snapchat, purely image-led, so we have to change this kind of the written word. We can't use the written word anymore. You know, we can't use this kind of nice press release stuff that we were all so good at writing. We've got to start using imagery, and even better, we've got to use video content. So we have to reshoot our creative and redo our creative so it tells a compelling story using a single image or using very short video content as well. That's the challenge, but it's also what's really exciting, is it just makes you take a totally different view of how you're putting content across to the audience. Again, there's lots of guides on how to do this online, so I'd encourage people to search and have a look if they're really interested. There's some nice stuff as well about how to tailor video content to make sure you get to the audience. There's a lot of stuff about this kind of 3, 7, and 10 second cut. So within 3 seconds, you should have shown a video that you know says what it's about. Within 7 seconds, you should have engaged the audience, and within 10 seconds, you should have told them what they need to do. So that's the kind of thing that we really focus on and really kind of hone, is to really get through to people in that kind of immediate 10 second window. It's quite a change because, I mean, if anyone's worked in TV or radio, so you know that TV ads are 30 seconds. Print media, you know, you can take all day to kind of create a nice looking print advert. So it's a real challenge, but really interesting for us.
Nice. Can you tell everybody a bit about the Active 10 campaign as well?
Yeah, sure. So Active 10, we touched on this a little bit earlier about walking. So Active 10 is our response to our walking evidence statement. So what we know is that people, as we said earlier, people do walk a lot, but they don't necessarily walk for the right duration. So a lot of people are walking for short periods, and they don't do it at the right intensity. So a lot of people are shuffling around or just kind of, you know, walking very, very little. And we know to get the health benefit, you've got to kind of
like
do
a
it.
Geisha or something.
Yeah, not doing it very much. So to get the health benefit, you've got to do it for 10 minutes and you've got to do it briskly. I mean, it's only 3.1 miles an hour. It's not that brisk, but you do have to do it to get the benefits. So that's what Active 10 set out to do. So there's two tranches to that. The first one was to reposition and nudge people into walking. So you'll find us talking about walking as a great means of exercise and repositioning that as something that people would do. And then nudging them to do it. So, you know, this is this location's only 10 minutes away. Have you thought, well, just walk to this, just do this. But the key to Active 10 is kind of like the app that we developed. And God, please, people, don't develop an app. Don't ever develop apps. I always have to say this as a caveat. Whatever the problem you've got, an app is never the solution, except in some very specific circumstances. And then this is one of the very specific circumstances that an app can work really well. So what we know from the app market is that the apps that thrive are ones that do a very simple job very well. They don't do much else. They just do one thing, but they do it really well. And that's what Active 10 does, is that it measures the intensity. It measures the intensity and duration of your walking. It's a really nice product that we built with Sheffield Hallam University. I'll get it the right way around. Not my university that I went to. It's the other one, Sheffield Hallam University. Built a really nice app. So our big drive around Active 10 is to push downloads off that app. Have I got that across clearly enough, John, that people shouldn't develop apps? It's never the solution.
Social media is not free, and people shouldn't develop apps. I'm getting it. I think I'm getting it, Dan.
Yeah, that's
I totally
clear.
Agree, app, by the way. Yeah.
Apps cost an absolute fortune to develop. They're so expensive, and unless you've got a really niche kind of thing to do like this. But we knew that there's a real gap in the market here, that people wanted to walk, they did walk, but they didn't do it for long enough, and they didn't do it fast enough. So a clever little app that uses the telemetry on your smartphone to get you to do those things is really important. So it nudges people to do that walking and to do that to the exercise. And I just checked this morning, got 611,000 downloads since launch. So a really nice kind of really nice
wow.
figure, decent reach.
That's
decent
good. Reach. Yeah, 611,000. I was one of them.
it's really successful. Used a mix of stuff, so we know from our experience that PR is really important. So to tell a compelling PR story and get that kind of big day one PR launch is very important, and that worked well and really drives downloads. Naturally we use digital, because if your call to action is to download an app, then naturally digital is a great advertising medium for you. But we also use TV in a big way, and this would be of no use to the audience whatsoever. It'll just be annoying. But I have to say it, because it's true, is that if you really want to get cut through on these issues, just TV has to be there, because that's a real way of getting mass market appeal. And even nowadays, with digital so popular, TV still cuts through and still has a value that digital cannot and doesn't achieve.
Well, I think what's useful about that is if you know that, and you know that you also can't do TV at a local level, then you know it's really worthwhile piggybacking the campaigns that you guys are running. You know, and we did that with Hounslow Council using the Active 10 campaign. We tried to match it up with when you guys were running it, and then run the local version of it with the digital ads focusing on getting people to sign up. So we kind of took advantage of the branding without having to do that ourselves. And that's
That works really well. Yeah, it does.
Which is basically what you're trying to do, isn't it? Your job, get partners to run campaigns kind of in line with what you guys are doing.
Yeah, that is my specific job. And what local can offer, what partners can offer that we can't, is those local services on the ground. So we can kind of motivate and nudge people into self-care, into self-help. But actually, if they want to do something a bit more structured, then that's where local comes in.
Yeah. That's one of the beauties, I think, with physical activity campaigns. When you've got that running locally, it's amazing, because you've got this opportunity to match people up at that, like a borough or maybe at a county level, but definitely like a borough or district or something like that, with these are the really specific activities we've got going on that are appropriate for this audience at this time, at this place, and all that kind of thing. And what's really difficult to do at that local level is the raising awareness and moving people along from the kind of, you know, pre-contemplation to contemplation stage and the stage of the change model and, you know, getting them thinking about getting active. But if nationally you're doing TV ads and digital ads and all these other kind of things, and then locally you can go, right, now let's use that, the fact that people have been nudged along a little bit, and get them signed up to our services, just beautiful. It's a perfect match, but it does require kind of clever timing, and then really requires, in my experience, the use of the of digital and like Facebook ads, for example, to get people to actually take an action. Because what I sometimes see people do locally is then do more awareness, but using leaflets. And it's like, no, it's got to be a really specific, strong call to action of exactly what to do next. And digital, like, so much more cost effective and so much better at getting that strong call to action where people can do something immediately, that it's just, you know, enormous. The difference between them is absolutely huge. So, that's really interesting hearing you say that about TV.
Let's tackle the attitude. Let's tackle the awareness thing head on, shall we? So another thing, if we look at the themes across this whole chat, so we get the generational difference on smartphone usage. I think we've put that to rest. We've got social media's free. I think we've dealt with that one. I think the other thing's about awareness. So there's two things you can do in campaigning. You can either change attitudes or change behaviour. So those are kind of like the two things that are available to you. And I think the local partners, for example, should definitely be in the changing behaviour category and not in the changing awareness category. So I say that a lot at the conferences that I speak at. And I think we're in the business of doing both, but then we're national, you know, we're a government body and we, you know, very well funded and use TV and that kind of thing. So we can change attitudes and we will do it around things like walking and making that a viable physical activity alternative. But actually, if you're operating at a local level, it's very hard, if not impossible, to do that piece of work. What you can do, and what's really positive, is you can change behaviour. So you can do exactly what you said, is you can get people to do something here and now in their local area that will change their behaviour and help build positive, healthy lifestyles.
Yeah, because there are those local services and the local teams know exactly what they are, and then you can kind of, if there's this awareness and someone's been moved from not thinking about getting active, for example, to thinking about it, and then they can do an advert that gets that person to go, great, I'm thinking about this now, and I'll be thinking about it for the next, whatever, day, maybe a week, whatever it is. And then you catch them at that time and move them into actually signing up, and then you can stay in touch with them and link them up with a local program. It's like, that's a beautiful thing to do if you can do it. But yeah, trying to change attitudes and awareness at a local level, just the budget's not there for doing that kind of campaign. It doesn't tend to work very well in my experience. So yeah, I'm totally with you.
Cool.
Okay. Well, that's really interesting. Yeah, we found that one of the other things that kind of struck me from what you've been saying is about walking campaigns. Like, just to kind of throw out some numbers for people about what kind of results we found at a local level, running those like walking group or promoting the app, that kind of thing. We had in Hounslow, we ran a campaign last year, got about 1,100 people signed up, and then another one there this January that got 250 odd, and then one in Redbridge that got 300 people registering. And this is over 55. Wanting to join walking groups, and it's like converting to actual real behavior change, you know, people actually going and joining the walking groups and starting, and people who were inactive. We're running one with Paths for All in Scotland that's had, I think, a couple of hundred sign up, and we're running another one with them next month. That's kind of like the Scottish equivalent of Walking for Health, or at least they have walks like Walking for Health there. So I think that's something that has got real potential at a local level, is running those kind of walking group campaigns to get over 55s into activity. But let's move on a little bit. Obviously, marketing is only part of it. How are you using digital to support people to make behaviour change?
Yeah, well, so we talked about developing tools. So that's something that, you know, we can do really well to build kind of, you know, apps like Active 10. And that contributes to our suite of digital products. So you'll see other things like the Sugar Smart app, which scans barcodes and tells you how much sugar, saturated fat and salt is in everyday products. So that's really useful. Again, another tool that we know is effective. The other one to call out is probably the How Are You quiz, which helps people reappraise their health. So ask people some really nice questions about their diet. exercise, their sleep and stress, their smoking and drinking, and gives them some real concrete things that they can do to change their behaviours based on their answers. So we'll call out some of the areas that they might need to look at. Can use quite complex algorithms that sit behind digital to really do that and do some nice pieces of work there. You can also bring to bear some really nice stuff around motivational techniques. So we can look at setting goals, giving people kind of nudge theory stuff. So anyone's familiar, I know quite a lot of people in this sector have trained in behavioral theory. You can give people nudge reminders and give people rewards as well, which is quite nice. And when I say rewards, I'm talking, you know, a well done sticker rather than money, but those are really effective. And also digital is really useful when it comes to direct marketing as well. So you can give people point of decision email reminders, for example, or text reminders. These are all really, digital makes all this kind of thing really possible and really effective. As you touched on before, John, we know that people don't put a lot of thought into making a lot of these decisions. They're made quite quickly, and why not? You don't really need to be thinking for hours about whether I should go for a run or not, or what cereal I should buy. People make these as snap decisions naturally. If you can influence them at that point with some clever kind of timed marketing, then that can be really effective.
Yeah, we found you mentioned a couple of things there that we've had really good results with as well. The kind of email and SMS follow up with people, because you can automate some of these things. You know, it's not easy to do. Maybe if you've never done it before, but that's kind of something we've done with a bunch of partners, is help them set up systems where somebody who signs up and is interested in getting active, maybe they won't get active straight away, but maybe they will do in a few months if you stay in touch with them on a regular basis. But who can afford to be staying in touch with people on a regular basis? Well, you can if you do it by email and it's automated. And so we had something with Macmillan Cancer Support where we had different versions of automated emails that go out to people at kind of set times after they sign up, based on whether they've been active before or not. And all of the emails are referencing the different resources that Macmillan's got and referencing different case studies and help. You know, if it's someone's a woman in their 50s, they're going to get a different version of the email to if they're a guy in their 20s, and all these different kind of ways of segmenting it, so someone gets the right message at the right time that kind of nudges them to go and try the activity. And if the first one doesn't work, that's all right, because they get a second one and a third one and a fourth one. And then if they do sign up for an activity, like with the walking groups I mentioned, we found SMS reminders are awesome, because you can send that like the day before the walk and remind people there's going to be a walk tomorrow, and do that a few times in a row, and you get kind of gradually more and more people turning up to that walk. So there's kind of quite a lot of clever stuff you can do now that's all about supporting people at the right time. What do you think in terms of what can people learn from this and implement locally? What's the takeaways?
I mean, the key here is that we've developed the tool. So we've put all the time and money into developing the app, the tool. Actually, people can use that now. So if you've got an organized walking group or another leisure offer, actually offer people the app as well so they can take that away and use it. It's also a really good way of getting people into physical activity as a customer pathway. So if people are totally inactive, actually the Active 10 app can be a really good way of just getting them doing a little bit, and then you can offer them further advancements on that. So you can offer them an organized walking group or a different leisure offer and get them into that kind of thing. I should also plug Couch to 5K as well, which is that once you've used the walking app, you can also have a little go at Couch to 5K, which is the most successful way of getting from just walking into running, which is really nice. So I'll give a plug to that one. So people can feel free to take that away as well. Essentially, it's about building a customer journey that works for you locally and uses our expensive and good products as kind of like the starting point.
Nice. All right. What campaigns has Public Health England got coming up?
So we've got about 30 extant campaigns at the moment, which is so it's a challenge kind of keeping all these in your head.
Yeah.
Big ones around Change for Life, a massive, you know, biggest, most well-funded campaign we've ever run in Britain as a from a public health point of view. So we've just done a massive piece of work on childhood nutrition, getting mums to look at the snacks they're giving kids and think about limiting them to 200 calorie snacks a day. We'll revisit physical activity under the Change for Life banner in the summer, and we'll be going into partnership with Again, I don't think we've announced it yet, so I'll just say a massive film franchise and leave it at that. And that will, we know that that's really going to excite and motivate kids to do physical activity over the summer. We're currently doing a nice piece of work on adult nutrition as well, which is quite interesting. So getting people to think about having 400, 600, 600 calorie meals. This would be 400 for breakfast and then 600 calories each for lunch and dinner. We know that people are just eating way too much, let alone the quality of what they're eating. They're just eating way too much. And this will help people start to navigate that landscape a bit more successfully. And then the other one that's worth plugging on physical activity is definitely Couch to 5K. I just think, again, it's quite fun. So BBC, we redid the voiceovers on Couch to 5K. I don't know if anyone's used that app. We redid that with BBC celebrities last year. So you could pick your favourite BBC celebrity. And they would narrate your Couch to 5K experience, which is really nice. It's basically them giving you motivational tips as you walk and then move into running. And, you know, so you do more walk, you do walking and then more running and more running. And eventually you build up to being able to run 5 kilometres, which is really nice. We've just... The original woman who did Couch to 5K is massively popular. I mean, we had a huge, like, silly numbers of downloads of this app, but she was called Laura, the original voice of Couch to 5K, and she went on maternity leave, she had a baby, and she's just come back, and a lot of people got in touch with us asking where Laura had gone. So we've now come back. Laura is now back, so BBC, we've put her alongside the BBC celebrities, so you can have one of those 4 celebrities, or you can have Laura, which is quite nice.
Nice.
BBC are gonna do the BBC themselves are going to do a massive push on Couch to 5K and tie it in with their London Marathon coverage, which I think is really nice. And a really nice opportunity, actually, locally in London for, you know, also particularly local government, but other third sector, public sector as well, to do a nice tie-in there. So if you want to look beyond walking and look towards more of a, you know, more of an active audience, then Couch to 5K is a fantastic product that you can push alongside it. And the final one to call out is which I can't ignore, is Stoptober, which is the most successful stop smoking mass participation event. As ever, we know that around 16% of all smokers will participate in Stoptober by attempting to quit, which is really nice. And we know that around half of them, around 9% of all smokers, will successfully quit for 28 days, which is the kind of magic number to help them reset their behavioural pathways around smoking addiction. So that's a really nice, really nice campaign, a really important one for us in the calendar in October.
Awesome. All right, we're going to move on to the Q&A in a minute. Just want to say to everybody, if you've been thinking, this sounds really interesting, but we could do some help, you know, we'd like to run a project locally and we want some help with it, or we want some training in how to use some of these ideas, then Make Sport Fun is here to help. So you can, if you'd like to run a, you know, or you're interested at least in kind of running a project together, or you want to talk about a training workshop, then there's going to be a chance in a minute to fill in the feedback form and then kind of book a call with me where we can talk it through, see if we're able to help you. So that's something we do for lots of councils and county sports partnerships and health charities and that kind of thing. So we're going to have a few links go out to you, kind of resources from today's call. We're going to link to the Campaign Resource Centre, which is going to give you details of all of the campaigns that Dan's mentioned, and so you can see what's coming up and you can download resources, all this kind of thing. So to get that link and to, if you want to book a call as well, then go to makesportfun.com/PHE for Public Health England. I'm just going to test that link myself, make sure that is working properly. So that's makesportfun.com/PHE, and that's going to get you the links to the resources and the option to stay if you'd like to book a call about a working together on a project or getting some training. So I'm going to, oh, and it'll also get you a replay of today's call if you want to share that with anybody as well. So I'm just going to give you 30 seconds to go and fill that in. So that link again was makesportfun.com/PHE. And then we'll go through the Q&A session. Right, so we've got a question from Stephanie Smith at Oxford Council. Do you have any advice or tips in light of Facebook's algorithm changes, since we need users to interact more actively with posts in order to gain a wider reach? Are there any examples you could give to try and encourage greater engagement with posts? What would you say to that, Dan?
Yeah, so this is the Guardian's take on the change. So this is their quote. Most people's news feeds are dominated by professionally made content, which is what we're essentially talking about, from brands, businesses, and the news media. Mark Zuckerberg says Facebook wants to change that balance, so your feed will instead be dominated by posts from friends and family. Yeah, so that's the scale of the problem, which is quite challenging. I mean, there's quite a lot of people that are saying that this is called organic reach. So this is what so if you kind of, it's a non-paid, isn't it? So I think probably everyone's familiar with organic reach on social, I hope. It's reaching your audiences without paying to do it. So you appear in their news feeds by organically publishing content and getting people to view it. That's kind of tailing off, and this algorithm has really affected that dramatically. And so that's what a lot of people are saying. Organic is dead. It's really hard now for brands and businesses to get through to their audiences without paying. That's really challenging. And what we do know is that you can create debate, and you can create comment and sharing and liking and that kind of thing with your audiences, and that will help you promote your content. So Facebook now, the new algorithm values those kind of engagements, that kind of sharing in between your friends and family. And I suppose a really good example that I came across would be, this is totally outside of the sector, but it's the Archers. If you want to have a look at BBC, just search BBC The Archers on Facebook. And it's a really nice way of engaging, of building and engaging an audience. So they're followed by just short of 90,000 people. And then have a look at their frequency. So have a look at how often they post. Have a look at the nature of the posts and how they range it from lighthearted to talking about the content, talking about spin-offs and related issues. And have a look about how many people engage with it as well. So how many people share that content into their own groups, and how many people comment on it directly. So here's a really nice example. There's a piece on the Archers, let's have a look at the date, 13th of March, that was last week. So there's a storyline on the Archers about children attending a funeral. So Nick Grundy, going into too much detail about the Archers. But anyway, there's talk about whether the kind of Facebook content does this big debate with their audience and just says, this is really thought-provoking, what do you guys think? Children attend a funeral, and it's just, so there's 57 on day one, there are 8 shares, 57 comments, and 29 detailed replies. So it's just, you know, huge amount of engagement there just by discussing these topics and looking more broadly than the content they are trying to put across. So they did that a few times. That was really nice. And then they just put one out that was just like snow, something like that, and then even that just got loads of comments as well. So it's a really nice example of how you can interact with your audience and get them thinking about your content, and then most importantly sharing that content with their groups and networks. Does that make sense, John? Do you think that covers the kind of
The other thing I'd say to Stephanie is that paying for ad, but you know, boosting your content, paying for it, is going to get you like enormously more reach with exactly the audience you want to get to without spending a huge amount of money on it. So that would be my kind of what I've seen people get the best results from.
Yeah, definitely. I guess I didn't. Yeah, I mean, I'm not here to flog Facebook advertising, but yeah, I mean, you're right.
Yeah. If you've been, I guess, are you sponsored by Facebook? Yeah, it's like no, but it's great.
If you were being cynical, you know, you could say that they overvalue friends and family shares, because that means you've got to pay. Effectively, it makes businesses and brands pay more and pay more often. So you could be cynical and say that, but yeah, you're right. You know, if you really want to reach specific audiences, then you do have to pay for it.
Yeah, yeah. Right, just time for one last question. Kristen Hall from Active Norfolk said, "What's your advice on the types of resources and content that can attract non-traditional partners to a site about sport and physical activity, and how do you promote that content to partners?"
I wonder what I mean in terms of partners here.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out as well, Kristen. What's your advice on the types of resources and content that can attract non-traditional partners to a site about sport and physical activity? I'm not sure.
I mean, if we talk about audience, if we talk about inactive audiences, which has been the theme through our discussion, I think what we've learned clearly is that it's quite easy to put people off sport and physical activity and leisure. So it's important to have an offer that doesn't feel too sporty, doesn't feel too like, you know, games at school kind of thing, and feels like there's more. If we're talking non-traditional kind of activities, then there's more things to do there for more people. So organized walking groups, really good example. You know, things like, you know, yoga groups. I hate to use it because it sounds so middle class, but like, you know, like things like that aren't just, you know, go to the gym or play football or things like that, you know. That kind of content's really useful. That kind of content's really important to have an offer around that. I suppose in terms of engaging people digitally on websites, we know that video content's really important. I suppose that pretty basic stuff around not having reams and reams of text. So, you know, make sure that it's really strong on imagery and then film content. If you can put together some nice little films, that's really engaging for people.
Nice. All right, we better call it a day, everybody. It is we've just come up to an hour. So just a reminder to get the link to all of the campaigns that Dan's talked about, all the resources that Public Health England have available for you to use. We've got the link for you. Just go to makesportfund.com/PHE, fill in the form, and you'll get sent the link to that, and you'll get sent the replay of today's call. And if you're interested in getting, you know, working together to run a project or get some training, then there's a tick box in that feedback form as well, so go and fill that in. And thank you very much, Dan, for coming and talking to everybody today. Really appreciate your time. Thanks to everybody for your attention, listening in, and let's wrap it up.
Cool. Thanks, John.
Cool. Thanks a lot, everybody.
The moderator has left the conference.